We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is Leprechaun Lunch, powered by First State Bank on Sports Radio 960 AM WSBT.
Just looking at the Twitch channel, Sports Radio 960 WSBT on Twitch, by the way. Before I turned on the lights, man, I looked pasty. Holy cow! Like, I'm pretty pasty anyway. But not having the lights on kind of kicked it up an extra notch. Like, not having, like, all the lights on really kicked it up a notch. A really frightening notch. Holy hell. How are you? I'm Jimmy Rosari. This is Leprechaun Lunch, powered by First State Bank, locally owned and operated. Also by Imperial Furniture in Dowagiac, where furniture shopping is fun. Lozier, launch your career at Lozier. Apply today at lifeatlozier.com. Let's see. Boston College on the docket. Just as much importance tomorrow, it's Senior Day. Senior's last home game at Notre Dame Stadium. Probably Michael Mayer's last home game at Notre Dame Stadium, too. Just saying. It's a big day. It's an emotional day. And looks like we've got just perfect weather for it. Yeah. Mid-November home games. Oh, my God. Oh. May you never change. But let's just get going with Marcus Freeman and how he feels about things, such as Senior Day.
Different places do it different ways. We did it different at Cincinnati than we did when I was a player. I remember my Senior Day was Ohio State versus Michigan. So not only was it Senior Day, it was a big rivalry game. There's a lot of emotion as a player. Not only do you run out of the tunnel for the last time, you embrace your coach, then your parents are out there. It can be an emotional time. But the ability, as I remember Coach Tress and what I'll continue to reiterate to the team is the ability to get your emotions under control after that moment. That's a special moment. I don't want you to not enjoy and embrace and be in that moment, but the challenge is the ability to get yourself back under control after that moment. Our team will be out there, which is a little bit different than in previous years. Our team will be out there as our seniors come out, because I want our team to be a part of. I want our team to really thank them for what they've done for this program and to be a part of that moment when they run out. But still, when the clock gets to zero and we're ready to kick the ball off, everybody's emotion has to be under control, and we got to be ready to refocus our energy towards what it's going to take to win. And so I remember that as a player. I remember our coach continuing to say it, and I'll continue to say the same thing. And I was able to do it, I think, as a player, to enjoy it, embrace it, to hug Coach Stress, to hug my family, and shed a tear or two because it's a special moment. It'll be a special moment in the stadium. But we got to refocus and get ready to go and do what it takes to win.
I'm just trying to wrap my mind around the image of like a 21, 22-year-old Marcus Freeman not in control. And I don't think I can do it. No, I can't. I can't do it. Can't do it. Anyway. Just can't. Can't picture it now. Can't picture it back then. What do you tell your seniors, Marcus? What do you tell your seniors to try and keep the emotions in check?
They built the foundation of what I believe is the future of the Notre Dame football program under me. And that's different than previous head coaches. Notre Dame football has been successful for a really long time, but but the leadership has changed and you have to rebuild that foundation to fit the new leader. And that's what I'll credit this group for, is really building the foundation for what I believe is going to be an extremely bright future of Notre Dame football. And so I'll be forever in debt to this. Will be a special group forever to me, because they had blind faith. Like, they didn't choose me to be their head coach, you know, and they came to Notre Dame for other reasons. Well, you know what? I was named head coach no matter if they chose me or not. And they committed to the vision I had for this football program. They worked tirelessly. They really built the bond. They established, they implemented the culture that I put on the walls. Like, I can put whatever you want on the walls, right? And I can say, this is what I want our program to do. But until it's implemented, until it's carried out from the players and the leaders throughout the football players and the team, that's just words on the wall. And this group of seniors has really done that. They've taken those words off the wall and said, you know, this is what our program's going to be built around. And they've truly built the foundation of what this program is.
It's absolutely right. This is kind of a special senior class for Marcus Freeman, not just because it's his first one either as the head coach. These are the guys who, back, you know, about a year ago or so, went to the administration, went to the athletic department, went to Jack Swarbrick, and said, that's the guy. He's it. We want to play for him. And this was just somebody who was, you know, here for just one season prior, you know, as the defensive coordinator. Made a big impression on this senior class. I don't think those guys regret doing that. Absolutely not. I don't think Notre Dame has any regrets on listening to this year's senior class. This year's senior class, you know, really brought some change to the university. Really brought some change, you know, especially the football program, you know, but just with the whole image of the university. Really, really good, you know, even if a ton of these guys don't go on to the NFL or anything like that, this is still a historic senior class. Just in what they were able to do at this university and within that football program. It really is. It really, really is. So you got senior day tomorrow. And like I said, plenty of emotions, you know, emotions running high and whatnot. But as I look out the window of this studio, through the window across the hall, through the window on the other side of the wall from that studio over there, you know, it's blowing. Wind chill's going to be low. It's supposed to be like 26 or so for kickoff tomorrow. How do you deal with that? Like, hell, a couple weeks ago, wasn't that cold? Nice, you know, fall night. How do you prep for temperatures like that? How do you prep your guys for, you know, as I look out these windows, how do you prep for that?
Yeah, you embrace it. The first thing I told them Tuesday, I was like, we're practicing outside. And it's a prepare your mind for it. We're going outside. And so we practice all day Tuesday outside. Yesterday was just going to be a little bit too wet. I wanted to stay outside all week, but yesterday, because of the snow, it was just too wet. So I wanted to get good work. So on a third down day and you know, the things we had to work on yesterday, we decided to go inside. And then today we'll be back outside. So again, it's just understanding that we're going to practice outside. We're going to play outside, dress warm and go play. You know, if you dress appropriately, it won't be an issue. If you try to be a tough guy, there's no such thing as cold, tough guys, you know, and that's what I told him. You better be a warm, tough guy. And so make sure you dress appropriately and go practice and go play.
Remember, kids, no such thing as a cold, tough guy. That may be my favorite line from the week. No such thing as a cold, tough guy. All right. Okay. So, of course, you know, last home game of the season, senior day, kind of coming off a, definitely a win against Navy. Certainly took a unconventional way to get that victory. Basically putting it in neutral at halftime is kind of what happened. But, how do you rebound from a second half like they had against Navy? How do you keep that from happening against Boston College?
I'm extremely proud of the team, the coaching staff, for a hard-fought win and finding a way to win. And we knew going into that game it wasn't going to be easy. We knew it wasn't. But we found a way to get it done, and that's what matters. And it's the tale of two halves, and I know we'll address it here in a little bit, but, you know, again, the positive, the ability to score 35 points against that defense that's unorthodox at times, and, another block punt was huge for us. The second half execution wasn't where we would liked it to be, obviously, but the lessons you can learn in the situations that occurred in that second half are priceless. They're valuable. And, the ability to learn from a win is something that as a coach you love to be able to do. And so it was really good to be able to address some of those situations in the game that happened yesterday in the meeting and in practice, and, continue to enjoy a victory Sunday. So,
do kind of have to address the defense too, kind of. They did let 19 unanswered wind up on the scoreboard. Like, Notre Dame could have, been held to 12 yards on offense in the second half of that game. But if they had held the Navy offense to, zero or three or seven even, nobody's talking about that second half. They're just kind of talking more about just how god-awfully boring that game, the second half of that game was. Not the almost comeback of the Naval Academy, So how, what do you do with the defense?
Yeah, I think you look at the first half, and going back and watching the tape, they still had similar thought process in defense in terms of bringing a lot of pressure. They dropped a little bit, played a little bit of two, and but, when you bring all that pressure, it's high risk, high reward. And what you saw in the first half is we scored five out of six possessions we had on offense. And, I think coming out in the second half, they continued to do it. If we execute the way we were supposed to execute and like we did in the first half, now you're adding 70 points total, 35 plus 35 is 70. And so, that's 70 points. But the other part of that is the high reward where they limit us to 12 yards in offense. And so that's, again, I don't know if teams will try to copy that, and I think us now on Monday, look back and say, okay, if a team wants to bring all out pressure, we got to execute. I think going into the game was like, okay, we're going to execute. But we didn't in the second half. And, that was probably more Navy-ish defense than you'll see, probably from Boston College. I don't know about USC. But again, there's still the details of offense that we still have to execute. We still have to protect. I don't care if you're bringing eight guys, seven guys, you're bringing four guys. It's still an execution. There's still a decision-making, process that we have on both sides of the ball, but that you have to do it, right? And there's no excuse for not setting the protection the right way. There's no excuse for not blocking the guy that we've worked in practice. You see him come in, you got to block him. There's no excuse for having bad fundamentals. And those are all things. And that's why I want to make sure I understand it's not just one thing that Navy was doing or we were doing that said this is what happened. No, there was a multitude of things that we did not do and they were doing that really contributed to the second half.
Pretty cut and dry right there, really, don't you think? Anyway, so how do you inspire that, though? Here's an idea on how you can inspire for the second half. threaten to hold guys off of special teams because, like, every starter, I think, like, yeah, every starter, I think, is wanting to get in on special teams. to kind of paraphrase a little bit, chicks dig the punt block, you know? Starters on special teams, you know, I mean, that's certainly elevated the game for the special teams unit. When you have your best players going out there on special teams, of course that's going to elevate. Marcus, how do you feel?
Everybody's clamoring to get in that punt block unit. Everybody wants a piece of that now. But, you know, that was something that was important. You know, the minute I became head coach, I wanted them to know that there was a huge importance for me of not only who's on the special teams unit, but how I view special teams. And so, you know, I'm in every meeting. I'm involved with special teams just because I want them to know how important it is. You know, every single meeting that we have on special teams, I'm going to be there and make sure that I can be a voice. I can be somebody that, when we're on the practice field, can make sure and coach guys and hold them accountable because it's important. In terms of the starters on the units, you know, Coach Mason, early in the year, I can't remember when he did it, maybe it started fall camp or spring, you know, he showed national championship teams, he showed college football playoff teams and the amount of starters they had on their teams. And we wanted to show our guys that the best teams in college football have a lot of their starters on special teams. And so it's going to be important to us. Our starters are going to be on special teams, and we want our best players on those units.
Seems like that's a new thing too, you know, putting the starters on special teams, which makes you wonder, why doesn't the NFL do it? Of course, wanting to play on special teams, you know, I mean, part of that is wanting to play for special teams coordinator, quite honestly. And here's Brian Mason on, or Marcus Freeman on Brian Mason.
I don't want to say it in a negative way. You know, the more time you spend around Brian Mason, the more you'll appreciate his personality. I think if you spend just a little amount of time with him, you might have a perception one way or other for who you think he is. But he is extremely intelligent, extremely hardworking. He's a great motivator. To see his growth as an individual and as a coach from 2011 till now has been tremendous. And he continues to get better and better, you know, but not only is it the beauty of a coach is coaches are evaluated off of how they can get their players to play and execute what they want. Brian Mason would be the smartest guy in the room, but if his players aren't playing at a high level, then it's a waste. And so what he's doing is he's using his talents, his individual gifts, and he's able to get this units, not just one punt block unit, which is getting the most notoriety right now, but all four special teams unit, including, and then add the field goal and field goal block unit, he's getting them to really perform at a high level. And so he's a unique, I don't want to say quirky, he'll get mad at me, but he's a unique individual. But he's awesome. I love spending time with him, and I love to see the growth he's continuing to have as a football coach.
What's wrong with quirky? There's nothing wrong with quirky. Anyway, some quarterback issues, both sides of the ball, really. First of all, let's real quick, you know, a Tyler Buchner update from Marcus Freeman.
You know, he's practicing, doing some individual stuff, not wearing pads and stuff like that, but he's participating in parts of practice, and in other parts of practice, he's doing some rehab still.
So that's a good sign. He'll be ready for next season. They're not going to throw him out there for a bowl game. They're just not. Why even risk that? But on the other side of the ball, people were kind of hoping, you know, Phil Dracovic would be the guy to come into this game for Boston College, you know, at least people around here. And I can only imagine that Phil probably wanted that to happen too. Unfortunately, injuries get in the way, as they so often do with the game of football. So how do you prep for Moorhead, huh?
I've really just kind of gone through the last two games so far. So I've seen the Moorhead guy at quarterback. And, you know, from what I hear, just talking to, you know, some of the defensive coaches and even some of the offensive coaches, there's some similarities between Phil and the one that the Moorhead that's playing now. And so I don't think defensively you'll change depending on who's going to be a quarterback. But, you know, the Moorhead kid is does a really good job of, you know, extending plays with his legs, you know, the ability to not get rattled. You know, that last minute drive versus North Carolina State was so impressive, and the ability to, you know, hit Takis, who I know well, you know, hit George on a couple third downs and a fourth down on that last drive, and you know, to throw the touchdown. I mean, it was it shows a maturity for a young player, and you know, it's a good offense, and he's a good player.
Just so we all know, it's Emmett Moorhead. Emmett Moorhead, okay? Emmett Moorhead. Okay. All right. It's okay. I forgot him too, quite honestly. We'll talk more about Emmett Moorhead coming up in the next segment. I'm going to be talking with, well, I've got somebody on the other side of the ball to talk to. So we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. Offensively, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. A little bit of a challenge tomorrow. You know, I mean, running game, probably, you know, I mean, the best bet anyway for Notre Dame. But it's definitely going to be kicked up a notch because it's going to be cold. It's going to be windy as all get out, too, apparently, during the game. That ought to be fun. But you're still probably going to see plenty of Braden Lindsey. At least you hope so, anyway. Especially after the week that he had last week. Marcus, how do you feel about Braden Lindsey's week?
Resilient. You know, a guy that didn't complain, continued to come to work, continued to work his tail off. And as I tell our guys all the time, you don't know when your reward comes. You know, for Braden, the ability to just continue to work tirelessly throughout the season, and then all of a sudden you have a game where you're called upon and the ball comes your way and you're able to make some huge catches and one of the most impressive catches I've seen. And, you know, it's a great reminder for our guys that continue to work. Don't complain. You know, your time is coming if you do the right things. And when the opportunity presents itself, if you're ready to go, you'll make those plays. And so it's a great example of what we want our guys to understand is that sometimes you don't control – you know, the opportunities that come your way, you control how prepared you are and how hard you work. And Braden Lindsey on Saturday was a great example of that.
Damn, that catch. You know what stinks about that catch? The one thing that stinks about that catch is that it wound up getting overshadowed by Justin Jefferson and Stephon Diggs on Sunday. That's the only thing that stinks about it. Other than that, an amazing catch that I'm still thinking about. But even in my mind, it kind of gets, you know, Justin Jefferson and of the Vikings and Stephon Diggs of the Bills, you know, kind of cutting in line a little bit. So that was the only bad thing about the Braden Lindsey catch was that it happened before the two pro guys went out and had a clinic as far as receiving went. So Boston College, Notre Dame, our coverage will get underway 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. The replay of the Marcus Freeman Show. That's the final episode of the Marcus Freeman Show for the season as well. They don't do an episode for Thanksgiving because it's Thanksgiving, for crying out loud. And let's see. That's at 8. Legacy Heating and Air Game Day, 9 o'clock. Tim Growl and myself. We're not going to be outside. Hooray! Hooray! Going to be inside. We're going to be inside O'Rourke's at Eddie Street Commons. Come on by, stop in, catch the show, have an Irish coffee or two, and yeah, check it out. We've got Braxton Cave, the former Penn High School and Notre Dame offensive lineman, stopping by. Also, former Fighting Irish middle linebacker Tavon Coney, and former Notre Dame and NFL offensive lineman Trevor Robinson, and plenty more surprises. That's with Legacy Heating and Air Game Day. at 9 a.m. tomorrow, 9 to 11. And then at 11, Darren Pritchett, Tyler Horka from Blue and Gold Illustrated. They've got Game Day Sports Beat live from Notre Dame Stadium, taking you all the way up to the radio network's coverage starting at 1:30. Kickoff a little after 2:30. Irish a 21-point favorite, by the way. Point total set at 43 for this game. 43 for the game. I'm gonna take an under on that. And then, of course, after the game, Reggie Brooks and myself, we will have the official Notre Dame football post-game show presented by St. Joseph Health System. That is your game day coverage for tomorrow. The last home game of the season at Notre Dame Stadium. Senior day at Notre Dame Stadium. And a day that's colder than all get out as far as hanging around outside tomorrow. Come on by. Come on by, you know, especially at O'Rourke's from 9 to 11. We'll keep you warm. We'll warm you up. It's a good way to start your day, all right? And, of course, you know, all through the day with our coverage here on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Coming up, I talked with a beat reporter from the Boston Globe, the Boston College football beat reporter, Trevor Haas. I'll have our conversation that I recorded yesterday. That is coming up on Leprechaun Lunch, powered by First State Bank.
Sports Radio 960 AM, WSBT.
Sports Radio 960 WSBT, Jim Irizarry with Leprechaun Lunch, powered by First State Bank. Everything rolling on with the view from the opponent's press box. An interesting view nonetheless, just because of the connections between Boston College and Notre Dame. To help clear some of that up is Trevor Haas from the Boston Globe. He covers Boston College sports and a bunch of other stuff on the sports beat. Appreciate the time, Trevor.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Should be a fun matchup.
Yeah. Like I said, a bunch of connections between these two schools. Of course, you know, everybody knows, you know, Phil Dracovic, you know, started here, transferred to Boston College. John McNulty, you know, was a coach here. George Takis, you know, the tight end, he started here. He transferred to Boston College. Is there kind of a you know, let's go out and, you know, kind of show them what's what from any of those guys, or, you know, is that rubbing off on the team?
Well, you basically just did my job for me and said, you know, the three connections. So good job there. You know, I think BC, you know, obviously they're going to say the right things. They're, you know, they're well coached media wise, and, you know, they understand that it's more about the team than it is themselves. But I mean, I think, you know, there's no doubt that it means a little extra to those guys, especially Phil. I mean, Phil, you know, he enjoyed his time at Notre Dame to a certain degree, but it kind of left a sour taste in his mouth. You know, he was stuck behind Ian Book, and he just knew that he had more potential that he wasn't really unlocking there. So transferred to BC and was kind of reborn at BC, had a couple great seasons, was injured last year. And then this year he's been injured as well. So he's had some ups and downs for BC. And freshman quarterback Emmett Moorhead has looked really sharp, filling in for Phil, who's injured at the moment. So Jeff Halfley, the head coach, said that there's a chance that Dracovic could be the starter. He didn't rule it out, but it's likely that Moorhead will play. So at that point, you know, Phil would just be watching on the sideline like anyone else. Takis talked this week to the media. He, you know, said all the right things about Notre Dame and playing behind Meyer and all that stuff. Just said that he learned from him and vice versa. And yeah, they enjoyed their time together. But I'm sure he wants to prove himself, you know, that he can win that matchup one-on-one. I mean, the odds are that he won't logistically, reasonably, but at the same time, he's a really good player. Very physical guy, good pass catcher, great in tight windows. So I think if he gets the opportunity to make a big play, that's going to feel pretty darn good for him against his former team. So I'd imagine they do care more about it than the typical game.
Boston College coming into this game, 3-7 on the season, not exactly what everybody was thinking was going to happen. But last week, an upset win, 21-20 over number 17 North Carolina State. Notre Dame, of course, played Navy. That's really the only way I can describe that. it's Notre Dame Navy. There's guaranteed to be something weird about the game, no matter who wins. But is there at least that glimmer of hope? You know, hey, maybe Notre Dame's looking past us. you know, looking ahead to USC. You know, can we continue to build off of the win last week? What's the mood in the locker room?
Yeah, so I think they're definitely trying to build off that win. I mean, that was a, like you said, it hasn't been the season they envisioned. I think, you know, when this team started, a lot of people thought that they would, you know, get 7 or 8 wins and kind of build off the momentum they had the past couple of years and take it to the next step. But they've had tons of injuries. Just the offensive line in particular has been decimated by injuries. Their starting guard, Christian Mahogany, who will be a future NFL player, was, you know, tore his ACL before this year even began. And then just kind of a ripple effect from there. And their offensive line has just been, you know, a work in progress every week. It's been changing constantly. This past week was the first time that they had the same offensive line the whole season for 2 games straight, which is kind of a ridiculous stat. So it's just been difficult. So I think, you know, the building up to the NC State game, it was kind of like, all right, like we're in this spot. We have a good team. We can do this. But at the same time, they hadn't really shown that they could do it to that point. So that was a huge win for the program and just, you know, Halfley's tenure just to show that, all right, like, they can do this thing. They can contend with these ranked teams. They hadn't beat a ranked team since 2014, which is quite a while, obviously. Halfley said he was happy to not hear that stat anymore. So I'd imagine that's quite a relief. Sure. So I think it showed the formula for them. Their run game is just frankly not very good right now. They had -1 rushing yard for the whole game, not just the fourth quarter, the whole game. And NC State had 200, but BC was able to hold NC State to -2 passing yards in the fourth quarter. And Moorhead just kind of took over and led this crazy drive, 12 plays, 69 yards in the final couple minutes, and threw a touchdown pass to freshman Joe Griffin with 14 seconds left, and BC found a way to win 21-20. So definitely the most captivating game I've covered in my 3 years on the beat. And just a chance for them to kind of show, like, all right, we can do this thing and kind of build off that stuff. I think Notre Dame is personally, I think they're a better team than NC State, but at the same time, if I were a BC fan, I would be optimistic because BC really has nothing to lose and Notre Dame has a lot to lose. So right. We'll see what happens. My pick's Notre Dame, but you never know.
Is there money on that? Or
There is no money on that.
Okay. All right. Trevor Haas from Boston College joining me right now on Leprechaun Lunch. He covers Boston College and a bunch of other things for the Boston Globe. Boston College does have a pretty good receiver in Zay Flowers. He's the school's career leader with 2,900 yards, right smack dab on the button. 10 catches for touchdowns this year, 4 of them from 50 yards or more. What does the Notre Dame secondary have to look for with Zay Flowers?
Zay Flowers is one of the most dynamic, charismatic, personable athletes I've ever covered at any level. I can't say anything but good things about him. He's just a very, very explosive player. Great ability to get downfield and take the top off the defense, but also good as a slot receiver. Very shifty. You kind of think you'll have him wrapped up and then he'll sneak by 2 guys and 2 more guys. And then a 5-yard gain turns into a 35-yard touchdown. So, it's just really impressive what he's been able to do. Coach Affley has credited him throughout the whole season just for, you know, keeping his head up and not kind of feeling sorry for himself that BC hasn't had the year that they wanted. Flowers turned down tons of money in the offseason. He could have gone elsewhere and signed an NIL deal, but he elected to stay at BC and finish his degree and just kind of ride it out with Dracovic and Halfley and everyone. So definitely a commendable thing to do in today's era, just to, you know, stick with the process and assume that things will work out. And then even when they don't, the way you envisioned, just to stay positive and upbeat. So I think without Flowers, this season would be even more bleak for BC. But with Flowers, it's been, you know, manageable, and they've won some decent games against Louisville and NC State. So he'll go down as the best receiver in BC history, and these next 2 games are a chance for him to solidify his place as the all-time leading receiver in receptions, touchdowns, and yards. He could finish in first in all 3. So we'll see what happens. But definitely an awesome player and a joy to cover.
Defense as well has a beast in Marcus Valdez, the ACC's defensive lineman of the week. What are some strengths that Valdez brings to the defense?
Halfley always says that he's playing with 2 bionic arms, which is kind of funny. Just can't really, you know, do much physically, but he's able to make the most of it. So he's a really physical guy. Just very, very smart, cerebral player who's able to, you know, get in between small spaces, and just kind of wreak havoc on the offense. He had a great game last week, huge in many, many areas. I think he's just one of those guys who's been there. He's been there 6 years, which is pretty, it's a long time to be anywhere. So kudos to him for sticking that out. And I think it's kind of like a, you know, a last hurrah in a way. Like, this season hasn't gone the way I wanted, as I said, but at the same time, they're not really giving up and they're kind of fighting till the finish. So I think that was a game he'll remember for a while. He said it was his favorite game in his 6 years there. So that pretty much speaks for itself, his best moment there. So good for him for kind of, you know, riding it out and sticking with it. So they have a pretty great defense overall. It's been up and down this season, but a lot of skilled players. So I do think that the defense is capable of stopping Notre Dame potentially. Obviously that's easier said than done, but they do have some skill there. So I'd expect a decently low scoring game, kind of like a 24-14 or a, you know, 31-17, something in that range, as opposed to like a 40 whatever to 30 whatever. So we'll see what happens.
All right. I'm pretty sure it's going to be a windy day, and it's going to be a cold day as well here in South Bend tomorrow. So, you know, yeah, typically the run game tends to shine a little bit more for both sides on days like tomorrow are supposed
to. That certainly favors Notre Dame.
Yeah, it does. But what are some things from the second half of the Navy game that maybe Boston College went, ooh, let's focus in on that. That we can exploit.
I would be lying if I said I had a good answer for that one. I appreciate the question, but I'm not going to make something up.
Okay. All right, fine.
I can make something up if you want me to, but it would be made up.
I mean, if you want to, I mean, let's see how creative you can get right on the spot.
I can talk from the BC side of things, but I did not see that game, so I don't know what happened.
Well, all you gotta really know is 12 yards for the entire half for Notre Dame.
Wow.
12 yards. I was sitting there watching it and just going, did you guys come out of the locker room at all for the second half, or is the team tied up somewhere? Like it was seriously a tale of two halves last week. Where it was just like, this is a totally different thing. What happened to the first half team here?
Huh. So. Well, that's interesting because, I mean, a similar thing happened for BC against NC State. I mean, NC State was up 14-0 in that game and looked like it would run away with like a, you know, 35-7 kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then BC came back and found a way to win. So, like I mentioned earlier, they held them to -2 passing yards in the fourth quarter, which is pretty commendable. So, I don't know, maybe there's value in just, you know, not being afraid of the opponent and realizing that if you fall down early, you can kind of bounce back up and find a way to win on the road. So who knows?
Yeah. 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 Notre Dame and Boston College. It's another one of those games where something weird can happen. Do we have any chance of weirdness tomorrow?
Oh, there's always a chance of weirdness in college football.
True. Very true. But, Do you see this as a game that Boston College is you know, maybe going to be able to you know, just pull some surprises out? Are basically the gloves off for Boston College at this point?
Yeah, I would say so. I would expect to see some trickery and some things outside the box. I think BC has nothing to lose, and I do think that it's kind of like a, if you go on the road and you lose by 21 or 28 to Notre Dame, no one really blinks. But if you find a way to win, then all of a sudden you've beaten NC State and Notre Dame. Recruits see that and they're like, oh, okay. And then things build toward the future. So I don't think there's really much to lose, as I said. And I think it's just a chance for them to play free and play loose like they did against NC State. And who knows, as I said again, keep saying who knows, but you get it.
Of course, something weird could happen, you know, if you were to actually place a bet on, place some money down on Notre Dame winning tomorrow. So we're, that always seems to happen to me anyway, whenever I place a bet somewhere. Notre Dame has a 8-game win streak against Boston College, so far. You know, it could go to 9 tomorrow, or that losing streak for Boston College could end. Does that kind of salvage things as far as the season goes, do you think?
To some degree. Hafley said that, you know, it's obviously an historic rivalry, but Hafley indicated it's not really a rivalry right now. BC kind of has to do its part to make it one again. You know, it's like the Celtics and 76ers around here. Joel Embiid was like, this is not a rivalry because the Celtics always win. So It's a fair point, and I respect him happily for saying that.
Right.
I think, you know, if they win this game and beat Syracuse and then somehow get one of those weird 5-7 bowls and then win that game, all of a sudden you're at 6 wins again. That would be a success, given all they've endured with the offensive line and various things. But if they lose this game and then lose the next one, then they're 3-9. You can't really view that as a success. So the NC State win would be significant, but it wouldn't overshadow what's been a difficult season. So I think it kind of, these last two games are pretty pivotal for BC, just to kind of, even if they can get one, just to get to 4, which is not ideal, obviously, but it's better than nothing. So I think it's a wait and see situation, but they do have a lot to play for still.
Yeah. Hot seat at all for Halfley?
It was hot before the NC State game, but now it's
cooled
a little
off
less
a little
hot.
Bit? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
I think if they beat Notre Dame, then he's totally fine. But if they don't and lose to Syracuse, then we'll see what happens. But I've enjoyed, you know, covering him regardless. He's an excellent coach. I think he has a really good pulse for what his team needs, and he's able to keep them, you know, level headed during what's been a difficult season. So, if they want to go in a different direction, then, you know, they can do that. But personally, I think he's the man for the job, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Trevor Haas from the Boston Globe. He covers Boston College and a myriad of other sports as well for the Boston Globe. I do appreciate the time, sir.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There you go. I can't help but think, you know, every time, you know, like whenever I've come back and thought about this game this week, it's like Phil Dracovic kind of wishes that he was playing in this game. Kind of wishes he was playing this game. Granted, the coach that, you know, ticked him off, not here anymore, but still, just seeing that symbol probably would have made things a little bit more interesting, a little bit more lively heading into this game. Just saying. Let's see. Some betting advice. Notre Dame, a 20.5 point favorite, by the way, now. 20.5. Still might find 21, you know, by the time kickoff rolls around. So, all coming up in just a little bit. It's Leprechaun Lunch on Sports Radio 960 WSBT. Leprechaun Lunch, powered by First State Bank. Locally owned and operated. Also by South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. Edward Jones, making sense of investing. Contact James Kittner in South Bend or Kimberly Thibodeau in South Bend. And by Legacy Heating and Air, a Cook family business. I think this is how I'm going to get through the rest of my workday, just by listening to the Allman Brothers. Yeah, that's... Yeah, once this thing's done here, yeah, it's just Allman Brothers all day for me. Just, you know, if you're trying to call, and you just hear nothing but Allman Brothers in the background, you'll know why. You'll know why. Let's lay some money down. We don't get them girls loose. TJR. Get the world loose. Let's try to expand our wallets. Let's try to... make our bank accounts look a little bit better, a hint better. Like I mentioned, Notre Dame, 20.5 to 21 point favorite tomorrow. The point total sitting at 43. I'm taking the under 43 on that. Not that I don't think Notre Dame could put up 43 points, you know, especially against a Boston College. I mean, hell, they put up 35 against Navy. They put up 35 against Clemson. But I think, you know, I think the weather's going to keep the point total down. So that's just me, though. IU Michigan State, that's a noon kickoff. You know, at Michigan State. 47.5 is the point total on that one. and IU is just so absolutely terrible on defense, Sparty might get 47 by itself. Just saying. You know, like Notre Dame is invariably going to take its foot off the pedal, you know? I don't think Michigan State's in that mindset. And also, I think IU has pretty much gone with the ole style of defense. Over the past 11 quarters, since taking a 14-0 lead against Rutgers in the first quarter of that game, Hoosiers have been outscored 125-31. They've allowed more than 40 points in back-to-back games for the first time since October 13th, 2018. And, you know, Michigan State's defense, not all that great either. So, 47.5. I like the over for IU and Michigan State of over 47.5 points. Northwestern taking on Purdue tomorrow. That also a noon start down in West Lafayette. This game, not going over. Not going, no. No. Ross-Ade Stadium is a wind tunnel. No. Absolutely not. There will be no passing game to speak of. At least on Purdue's side. We know that that's the case with Northwestern anyway. Wildcats have a poor run defense, though. Boilermakers could lean on Devin Mockaby, their breakout star running back. Northwestern, you know, going to try to establish the run as well because it's really all they have. Both teams also with unreliable kickers. And did I mention that Ross-Ade Stadium is a wind tunnel? 44 points, the point total for that game. Under. Under for Northwestern at Purdue. All right. A little more interesting games. Another rivalry game. TCU and Baylor. That's at Baylor. TCU coming off, two straight interstate wins. Texas last week. Pressure's kind of mounting for TCU to stay undefeated. They're number 4 in the college football playoff ranking. They've got a seat at the table. Got a seat there. Baylor was looking ahead to this matchup by, just scoring 3 points at home last week. You could see it. Baylor 11-4 against the spread as underdogs in its last 15. 13-5 against the spread against winning teams the past 3 seasons. That spread's just 2.5 points, too. A smart man would go Baylor in the points. 2.5 point spread, Baylor in the points on that game. Illinois at Michigan. Point total here at 41. Number 1 total defense in Michigan. Number 2 defense in Illinois. Point total of 41. I think the defense is, kind of going to show up. The top 2 are playing. We've also got 2 quarterbacks that don't turn the ball over a whole heck of a lot. And they've only gone over just 3 times in their last 10 meetings. Illinois defense allows just 12.5 points a game. Michigan allowing a nation's best 11.2. And also winds and 25-degree temperatures, blah, blah, blah. Under 41 points for Illinois and Michigan. That's your play as far as Illinois and Michigan. That's a noon kickoff as well. One of the more ridiculous games I think that could happen tomorrow. I think definitely going to be Houston and ECU. So that's a 6-point spread on that game. A 6-point spread for Houston and Eastern Carolina. Point total at 67.5. Both of these teams can put up points. I'm not going to go with the point total, though. Instead, I'm going to go Houston plus 6 on this game because asking Eastern Carolina, or East Carolina, whatever the hell it is, asking ECU to go and cover 6 is ridiculous. Absolutely 100% ridiculous. Houston plus 6. All right. In the pros, the Bears are 3-point underdogs at Atlanta. Liking the Bears plus 3. Really, really on board with the Bears at plus 3 for the weekend. And then Colts are 7-point underdogs against the Eagles. Eagles are going to cover that 6.5. It's a 7 points. Eagles covering. Eagles and the points. All right. Leprechaun Lunch powered by First State Bank. That does it for this week. I'll see you tomorrow with Legacy Heating and Air Game Day. And, of course, the post-game show.